And I think for young coaches, loyalty is the most important thing.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Coach T.C. Swirsky, the head coach of the Memphis Hustle, which is the NBA G League affiliate of the Memphis Grizzlies. Coach Swirsky's coaching journey includes roles as an assistant coach with the Portland Trailblazers and as head video coordinator for the Memphis Grizzlies for 2 years. He joined the Hustle as lead assistant in 2023 and was promoted to head coach ahead of the 24-25 season. In his first season at the helm, Coach Swirsky secured his first career win as a head coach with a 90-85 victory over the Texas Legends and is showing to be a great young head coach in the making. In this episode, we talk about being adaptable with an always changing roster, doing your job without expecting any credit, and he gives us an inside look into a day in the life of a G League head coach. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach T.C. Swirsky. Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help. Trade in your machine, any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. You get free shipping on your purchase of a brand new Dr. Dish, but be sure to hurry because this offer only lasts this month of June only. Welcome, coaches, another episode, Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo here as always. Today we're graced. We got a great opportunity to learn from not only someone who's been around the game, but also the coach of the Memphis Hustle, Coach T.C. Swirsky. Coach Swirsky, welcome to the podcast. What's going on?
Al, Doug, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. Not too much. Just started our off season here, so just kicking into gear here.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Thank you for doing this.
There's always a lot of things that people, especially in your role, can learn. And I say your role being one, the head coach, obviously, but then two, being in the G League, right? I feel like that now is a huge piece to learn from, especially even for college coaches too, with the ever-changing rosters, everything always moving and adjusting. And then you as a coach kind of have to, on the fly, be able to adjust yourself, a roster. Everybody always says they want to build an offense and a defense around a team, but it's hard when you don't know your team. So we'll dive into some things along those sorts, get to pick your brain a little bit. But first, as we always like to do, is the big thing that we like to talk on is just your avenue, your path that got you to where you are. I know right out, you started coaching with Portland Trailblazers, Grizzlies, and then just right for the Memphis Hustle. And then I should say first as an assistant, now as the head coach. So from a video coordinator position, starting with Portland, to now being a head coach in the NBA with the G League, what have you learned about like leadership, about your journey? How has this like journey so far developed your philosophy and just your mentality to be a head coach now?
Yeah, it definitely started when I was in Portland. I started as a video intern under Coach Terry Stotts and was fortunate to be around like some really good men as coaches. I got blessed to be with a great group of assistants, great head coach, and like a really good support staff overall. Being a video intern at that time, I'm not sure like now, and I hate to be one of those guys that's like back in my day because I didn't really have that.
Yeah, but, I was just saying, yeah, back in your day, it was like three weeks ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long. Now. It was a little bit longer than that.
No, we got you.
I was the like lowest guy on the totem pole as far as like coaches go. I've been in a position where you could do the best job ever and nobody's going to care. And that kind of helped me just understand that I just need to keep putting my head down every day, going to work, whether people notice it or not, and just try not to really honestly screw up, but also at the same time, just do my job. And like I said, I was around some really good people there, some great leaders on our staff. So they would always just instill in me, just keep doing your job, keep putting your head down, keep going to work. And being the lowest person on the totem pole, it's helped me as a leader because now with my staff, I can relate to some of the people that work for me now and tell them I was in your shoes not that long ago, and just gives perspective on how you want to create relationships with your staff, as well as just from a coaching perspective, I was able to, like I said, be very fortunate to be around some people who helped develop some really good players on the court, but also their professional habits off the court as well, which I think is just as important. And I was looking back on this the other day, my first team in Portland when I was my first year, I think there's like only three guys that are still active in the NBA right now. I'll be telling stories to some of my staff members, and I have to remember they have no idea who some of these people are. It makes me feel old, but it goes to show no matter how long you've been around or whatever, you can still take those lessons from when I was on the bottom floor or my first job to where I am now. And it's pretty cool to see it all happen.
Yeah, for sure, man. Did you have, who were some of the people in that Portland staff? Because I have a question based on this answer.
We had a great staff. Head coach was Coach Stotts. We had, it was moving all throughout, but Jay Triano, Vanderpool, Dale Osborne, Nate Tibbetts, Jim Moran, John McCullough. We had unbelievable staff on the court and off the court. It was a special group.
Yeah. Who was, I know they all influenced you in their own ways, but who was your big brother on the staff? Kind of like you tend to sometimes gravitate towards that one person in a way. Not that's the only person you talk to, but there's usually one person that you really gravitate towards.
Yeah, for sure. If I had to pick one, it'd probably be Jim Moran. We were both video interns together for that first year. So we were making minimum wage, getting capped at like 30 hours a week. We were definitely not working 30 hours. We spent a lot of time together in a close space. So we were forced to be like, hey, if we don't like each other, this is not going to go well this
year. Yeah, no doubt. So, man, long season.
Yeah, so like we always had each other, but we spent so much time together that to this day, that's still my guy. And now he's at Florida State, so I'm happy for him. But learned lessons from all of them. Just Coach Vanderpool, like just on and off the court. Nate, obviously head coach of the Mercury now, doing a hell of a job. He was great at being inclusive with people like me, making me be confident on the court as well as taking care of me off the court. Dale Osborne, one of the best leaders of men I've ever been around in my entire life. The respect that he got from people in the building to players. Coach Triano, most outside the box coach I've ever been in my life, been around in my life. He just has these ideas. He knows the rule book so well. We loaded his staff, and
he gave you guys that. Jay probably gave you guys that FIBA flavor too, right? Because yeah, kind of Team Canada stuff.
He was one of those guys like you just wanted to have in a coach's meeting because he would bring something to the table that you weren't thinking of. And I think that's so valuable. You get into meetings now, it's, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And then you don't really have a wild card. Sometimes it's not good, but with him, he was prepared. And the ideas he had, they were just something that you'd want to have around because nobody was really thinking of the stuff he was thinking of.
Was there anything like going back to that video coordinator role? I feel like a lot of people that we have talked to have said like those beginning roles ultimately have set them up to be in the position that they are now, at least to be able to learn the industry, to be able to learn about the coaching background. Did that video coordinator role set you up? Do you still, is there anything that you've learned from those roles or those earlier roles that kind of helped you be set up for the situation that you're in?
Yeah, 100%. It was my in. I was a student manager at UNLV. And one of the reasons I picked to go to school there was one, I wanted to get away from the cold winters in Chicago. But the one of the main things was like summer league was going to be out there and USA basketball. I figured if I can do a really good job as a student manager, maybe they'll let me help out at summer league in USA. And they did. I don't know why, but they let me in the gym and I was able to help out. So I was able to meet some people and that's how I ended up in Portland. And because of that experience as a video guy, you at that time, you know, it wasn't as accessible to get everything like it is now. You can't just download something right away. You're waiting to download a quarter. It might take you 25, 30 minutes. Things aren't popping up on time. You could be there for a long time and you're forced to make a decision right there. Do you really love this or not? And it's every day. You got to be on every single day. You can't, there's no, yeah, sure, you get all-star break, but there's not like a time where it's like you can't be on. And going through that first year, like I said, you have to make a decision. Yeah, I really do love this. This is something I want to do. And I was forced to watch basketball. I don't like to say the word forced because I love watching it, but in that job, there's no, you gotta be about it. And if you're not, my dad told me this line. He said, if you don't do your homework, they'll find somebody to do it for you. And not like in a way where, okay, cool, you're doing my homework, but they'll get somebody in there that will. And they would have for sure. And I never wanted that to happen. I just never wanted to be replaced. And so I took a lot of pride in making sure that I was watching everything I needed to do, doing my job the best. And I love doing it. And those habits still stick with me today of just wanting to absorb myself with all the information and video that I could at the time. And it led me to become a head video guy here in Memphis.
You said something really great there, man. And I think, you know, anyone that listens to us, and a lot of rising coaches, either followers, members, tend to be in that support role. Maybe they recruit off campus some. A lot of times it's guys that are in that player development, VCs. But you mentioned something, and I like to call that moments of truth. Like when you have to decide, do I want to really chase this? And I'm sure every profession has that, right? You want to be a doctor, and I like to say that's great. And then when they pull your first dead body in front of you, you got to cut it open. It's okay, or surgeon, or whatever it is, like moment of truth. Do I really want to do this? Oh, damn, man, I didn't know. So I think every coach has got to come to grips with that. Not like a fear thing, but it's a good thing because it really makes you check yourself, what your motivations are, what your true passion is. That's great that you said that, man, because a lot of, as coaches try to find their way and take their steps as they build their career, there'll be multiple moments like that. It's a lot of times, it's not just one, because as you move and maybe as you progress, then there'll be another one and then it'll be tougher. And then you have to ask yourself that again.
For sure. Especially in that role, you're not getting a lot of feedback from people, to be honest. You could be doing the best job you could be. It doesn't matter. You're out of the way. You're out of sight, out of mind. Now, if you start messing up, you'll hear about it. But you're not getting a lot of feedback. So you could be doing a great job. And if you're somebody who's like, hey, you're doing great all the time, it might not be the best thing for you. So for me, it was just like, I'm just going to keep working until they tell me stop.
Yeah, for sure. Now, we like to call that here in the Rising Coaches world, grinding in silence. Be at peace with grinding in silence. Because when you're in that room, like you and Jim were in that room, it wasn't like people are coming by saying what's up all the time. Hey, how you guys doing? You know, like you're in the, it's like a, I remember when Mike Budenholzer was in San Antonio, he took me to his office. He was doing video coordinator in San Antonio when we became good friends. And his office looked like that picture of Eric Spoelstra when he was doing video with the Heat. He had the computer there to look like old school television.
Oh, yeah.
Man, it was a dungeon, man. Like, if you'd have put a couple of brooms and a mop bucket in there, it could have easily been a custodian's closet. But talk about a guy that grinded in silence, man, 19 years before he became a head coach. But no, great stuff, man. Great stuff.
So this is a loaded question, and this just made me think of it. So do with this and answer this how you can, but just a day in the life of a G League head coach. Now, I know one day is going to be completely opposite. I know some days are a lot more hectic. Obviously, a ton of things are changing, and one day isn't always going to be like the other. But just a general synopsis, like we'll say in season, do you guys do shoot arounds in the morning, then practice, film sessions? Kind of what is a typical day like?
Yeah, to keep it like as simple as possible, really depends if it's a game day or not a game day. If it's a game day, let's say we're at home, we'll probably have a shoot around at 10 in the morning at our facility here. And I'll meet with my staff before that. We'll go over preparation for that night's game, talk about who's available, who's not. One of my assistants will be in charge of scouting the team we're about to play that night. So we'll go over what we would like to do defensively, offensively, all that kind of stuff, matchups. We'll have our shoot around. After shoot around, there'll be a little bit of a gap. That's where I lock in on rotations, play calls, just things going into that night game that I know that I'm going to need to use, end of game stuff. And then obviously we'll get to the arena about 4 hours before the game, 3-4 hours before the game. Start locking in. I always like to go out there on the court to watch our guys warm up in the other team. When I was first starting in the league, Coach Stotts, he would always go out there, just make himself available. If anybody from another team wanted to say hello to them, staff members, maybe somebody from the other team. I was just like being out there. What am I going to do? Sit in the back and stare at a wall for 3 hours. So I just like being out there. And it's a chance for me to watch film with some of our guys maybe, or just get to catch up with them, talk to them, and then we'll play our game. If it's not a game day, it looks very similar. We'll meet as a staff. We'll have a practice. And then from practice, just be figuring out, getting ready for our next game from there.
Yeah. I got two questions. Number one, do you script as a in terms of play calls? Do you script like your first three, your first five? You hear that a lot in the NFL, right? Like they'll have that the night before meetings, and then the quarterback and either the head coach or the offensive coordinator, they'll just get on the same page about, okay, this is our first seven. Typically seven is what those guys will say. Is that something that you do? And then number two, you don't have to give up the legit goods on this because might be opponents listening or watching this deal. But how is your play card or your card structured? What you keep in your back pocket? Like, how is that set up? So a two-piece question there.
Yeah. I'll answer the first part, first question first. It really depends. So for me personally, if a team does something out of the ordinary or something that's a little different defensively, let's say that they blitz like every pick and roll, or let's say they, teams call it like blue or push or ice on the side. I'll try and get to that the first play to see if that's how they're going to start.
Yes.
Because that way I can set up what the next like down the line or whatever is going to look like. Maybe they'll do something that first play and then I'll remember that and just
File it away
and lock it for later in the game. Usually I don't really like to do much early. I got this from my coach, Jason March, who's the head coach before me. If you do something in that first half, it gives them a chance to talk about it at halftime. Whereas if you save it for that second half, they can't really talk as much about it during that break about what they're going to do with it. I know that's a mix of.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I like to use that first play just to see if they're doing something a little out of the ordinary, just to see if they're going to stay with it. And then a lot of the times, to be honest with you, if we have a two-way or an assignment, I'll probably try and go to them first play just to give them some confidence, let them know we're going to go to them. Yeah. And then the second part of that question, I have it all detailed as far as players first. So like I'll probably have our seven or eight of our guys with just three plays for them each. For example, like if it's a big guy, like it could be a post-up, it could be a three. So I'll go like through players, and then on the other side, it will be your need threes, your get it ins, lobs, if you have a guy that can catch a lob, and then sideline, baseline, all that kind of stuff, just detailed off to the side there. So I have a split between players and just like situations.
Yeah. No, I love that, man. I love that. Good stuff.
That's the one thing I love the most is this is the type of sport where as a coach, you can have a cheat sheet. Like we've talked about it. There's been multiple coaches that have come on here and they say that they have binders. Now, obviously the head coaches don't, the assistants are the one that carry it, but they have binders of all of the two go plays down the stretch.
Yeah.
Not Kyle only what Getter. They will run. Yeah. It was Getter over at Notre Dame.
Kyle Getter. He did it at VCU, I think, when he was at VCU.
Yeah. They had a binder of all of their plays, but then also the other team's plays. So then when it come down to, there's 10 seconds left, they open the binder and say, hey, this is what they're going to run. This is what they've ran before. So let's just assume this is – and it's just like you can have the answers in all of the cheats right accessible to you. I think people probably, if not, should use it more. That's one thing that I never really thought of using too much.
Yeah, hopefully they get them an iPad now or something so somebody doesn't have to carry that around.
Yeah, guy on the bench with the
– I think especially end of game, it's super important to have the other team's stuff. Like for us in the G, there's like a reset timeout. So basically at the end of – usually teams use it at the end. Instead of calling a timeout, I'm sure you guys know the rule that you could say reset timeout and you'll advance the ball, but you cannot huddle your team together. It's something that they're then experimenting with. So for me, it's important. Usually it's – like we have a reset play because you can't draw something up. You basically know what the other team's going to run. You want to know the other team's reset play when it gets to that point. You want to know exactly what's going to happen here. So little things like that, super important to know, especially down the stretch. And you're like, you could be as organized as you want to. You could have everything all set up. If the guy doesn't make a shot, then it's not going to end up looking good. So you still got to have guys that make the shots and get some points.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Players over plays always. Yeah. No doubt. Or players make plays work. I guess that's probably a better way of saying it.
Yeah. Hey, you score it. Cool.
Exactly. Yeah. Because sometimes that stuff happens and it's all great. They do a great job. Now there's 5 seconds and now a guy's got to go off script anyway and go make something happen. Talk about real quick just the importance for young coaches that want to be head coaches of being prepared and how that gives your players confidence.
Oh, I think it's everything. Probably the most valuable lesson I got from any sort of coaching was a guy that I had previously mentioned. His name was Dale Osborne. He's with the Orlando Magic right now. And he told me, he said, TC, I don't always agree with everything that the head coach is saying with basketball wise or whatever, but I'm always going to have his back. I'm going to be the most loyal person to him. He's the one putting a roof over my head. He's the one putting food on the table for my family. Why would I ever say, you know what? He's not a good guy. He's not this. He said, that's the guy that stuck his neck out for me to hire me. So I'm always have his back. Do I have to agree with, he wants to be up in pick and rolls, I want to be back. I don't have to sit there and say, yeah, we do whatever you want to coach. But I'm going to be loyal to him. And I think for young coaches, loyalty is the most important thing. If there's a situation where you're getting interviewed for a job or whatnot, you're probably around people that are pretty smart. There's a reason why you're getting interviewed. It's about the other stuff to me. Are you going to be enjoyable to be around for a long period of time? We're going to spend a lot of time together. Are you going to be somebody that I want to be around? Are you going to be somebody that I know I can trust? Because I trust that you're smart enough because you're getting opportunities. You are where you are for a reason. So just that loyalty to me is the one thing. And then the preparation, I think, when you get up in front of a team, which you'll have to do at some point if you want to become a coach, They are the best in the world at picking apart what is, they can sense, it's like,
yeah. A shark. No, their antennas are incredible. Yeah.
And I learned that very early on. Like, we had some good veterans in Portland, and I remember talking to them after some of our walkthroughs. Like, yeah, he knows what he's talking about. He didn't even look down at his paper during a walkthrough. He knows what he's talking about. I'll do everything. Like, I remember when I'm scouting, I'd hold the laptop up to my ear trying to feel like a play call or find a signal or anything visual. Because if there's any little thing, when you go to that meeting with your coach in the morning, coach, they call it, this is what's going to happen. Or like, you get in front of the team, if you just rehearsed it and prepared, those guys are going to believe, okay, he knows what he's talking about. I might not, like, why would we want to do this? But if you're confident in what you're about to do, it means the world. And those guys will really trust you until it goes horribly wrong. And then they'll go, why did we do that? But
but then when you say, my bad, fellas,
yeah,
that's powerful too.
Yeah, definitely. And I've had to do that before. I'm sure we all been there. There's a lot of times my thing is going over or under in pick and rolls with certain players. And sometimes a guy, he may burn you and you got guys looking at you crazy. It's like, you know what? Let's just adjust. That was on me. Let's move on. Let's try and figure out a way to get this. But that starts with relationships with the guys first. Yeah. And just like the loyalty and trust with your players, because if they don't feel that from the start, then they're already going to be doubting you. So you got to prove to them, especially me, I didn't play at this level. So I always feel like, you know, why would I not take people's input on what we can be doing? But I got to earn that trust regardless to be in a situation where they're going to be like, coach, no matter what you say, we got, like, we're rolling with today.
No, you're right, though. You said something there that's a big deal, because for the guys that didn't play, I was like you. I was a manager at Purdue. And so I always felt like my preparation and the things I tried to do and that would lead to the confidence in it. And then that confidence led to saying it with conviction. And I always felt I had to have that at maybe another notch higher than the guy that did play that's going to get the benefit of the doubt. Because if a guy maybe decorated career or two-time All-American, maybe not, you know, you have to be an All-American, but just played in the rotation for 4 years or 3 years or whatever at a level, or you were a pretty good player, went overseas for a little bit. There's a benefit of the doubt there that those guys get, that young guys like yourself that want to be at that level, you've got to earn it, but it's, you've got to just come in through the side door and you got to do it in a different way. But I think that the preparation, the confidence and the conviction have to be at a higher level, just because that's how you're going to get your benefit of the doubt. Because I can't say I played in this league, fellas, this is how it is. You don't have the benefit of saying that.
And that kind of leads me back to how I started off. I'm not doing my job. I'm not doing what my coach is providing for me if I don't do my best with my preparation. So like I said, Dale Osborne said, he putting a roof over your head and food on the table for your family. Why would I not do everything I can to prepare to make him look good when it matters the most? And that's preparation.
Our game is in an era, and I'm not trying to be get off my lawn guy, but our game is in a space where we can't hear that enough. And I think young guys need to continue to practice that, because never place advancement ahead of helping the big guy. And that should make your boss look good. You make him look good, team does well, they come looking for everybody eventually.
I just want to say, you can absolutely make something up when you're talking to a team. But if you say it with confidence, now, a lot of times, don't get me wrong, I'm sure they'll be able to weed out and tell when you're fabricating and when you're not. But if you were to stand there and say something with confidence and say, no, this is how we're going to do it, this is exactly how I want to do it, because this is how they're going to counter it, and you come with facts, people are going to be like, okay. Especially, again, to your first point, if they respect you, if they actually care about your word and they know you're putting in the work, you could be completely wrong in telling them something. But if you say it with confidence, especially as a coach, and they respect you, they'll learn the hard way and they'll make that mistake. And then, of course, again, going back to, then you have to be able to acknowledge that you made that mistake.
Yeah.
But the number one thing that I want to ask, and especially whenever we work with somebody in the G League, it's always a roster that is always changing. And now, not only with you guys, but just the college landscape, the NCAA landscape, JUCO, really everything now, right? Everything is just always changing. Rosters are always changing. So you are one of the best people to be able to ask this type of question for. When a roster is always changing, like, how do you, at least in the beginning of the year, with the team that you are set for at the start, how do you build a culture? Do you build a culture, or, and what are some ways that you do that? I know that's a buzzword that a lot of people like to use, but how do you like build that culture with a roster that is always changing? And those guys could be gone the next week or day or however it may be.
To make this the best situation for them as a player, are they going to develop the best? So that agent might have a great time with his player that he had and be like, you know what? If I know that if he goes to this organization, they're going to treat him well, they're going to get the most out of him as a player, he's going to develop, and he's going to really like the situation and environment. So that creates a culture in itself, because now you have these expectations about, okay, I'm joining the Memphis Grizzlies organization, I've heard really good things, I can't wait to be a part of it. I heard coaches, so-and-so, I heard the support staff, medical, they're going to do really well by me. And that sets the tone without even me having met them in person before. So it, to me, again, it really just starts with the organization.
Yeah, said, man. And take that another step further, because I like what Doug's question was there. What can college coaches learn from G League coaches in terms of flexibility? Let me change that. The willingness to be flexible and adaptable, because that's your world. You don't know what that roster is going to look like one day to the next.
Yeah, it's probably the number one thing about the job that you have to be about, and that's adaptable. Roster changes, where you're practicing at could change. You don't know. You could be on the road. The floor might be awful. It might change what you do for practice that day. You miss a flight on a connection. You just have to, it's all about adaptability. I think the number one thing is not saying no. You got to find a way to make things work. You're going to have to find a way to make the most out of each day. The coach I worked for here, Jason March with the Hustle, it was about like, how, we have to find a way to have fun with each day. somehow, some way. It's too long of a season. Guys is going to be upset about minutes. Guys might have something going off on outside of basketball. How are we going to make the most out of each day? And to me, that's what it's about. It's our jobs to be adaptable, to find ways to make days exciting, even when you're in a tough part of the season. You're at home, you're practicing at a weird hour sometimes. How are you going to get the most out of the guys? It's just being upfront with them at the beginning of the year, letting them know, hey, this is what it's going to be like. Some days are going to be tougher than others, but you're going to get better here. We're going to do everything we can to put confidence into you and just get the most out of you.
No, I couldn't agree more. You definitely got to be upfront with people. I feel like in the beginning of the season, I would be the type of coach, and I've already planned this out and thought about it. If I were the head coach, I would be telling the guys, hey, especially my captains, you're the ones I'm going to be digging in the most. Like, I'm going to absolutely make sure that if there's anybody, when things start going south in practice, like you hold your captains accountable, basically keep everybody else aligned, but be upfront about them early in the season. Yeah, we might be back and forth a little bit, but just letting you know so you understand, I'm not just coming at you just to be a dick, right? I'm actually doing this for a reason and to keep everybody accountable, and you're the one who can take it the most. So then at least the kid knows when you're cussing them out. Because there's been times I played for old school coaches. They'll get in your face and then they'll just walk away. Yeah, nothing happened. And then you're like in a whole mind game over there. What just happened? I got cussed out and I didn't even do anything wrong. But you now looking back on it, you understand what their concept, what their idea was.
Yeah, no question. And for me personally, I feel like with the way it's worked out, a lot of the guys that are joining the G League now, it's their first time playing professional basketball. They've maybe played at two, sometimes three colleges before. There's a good chance that one of their college coaches is going to be a lot harder on them than I was, or say some things to them that differently than I would have. So a lot of them are like blown away just how things operate just a little differently at the professional level. I'm not saying I don't get on to guys, but it's not going to be a screaming, yelling environment every day. They've been through some of that. So that's why, like you said, being upfront, just tell them like, hey, this is how this is going to work. There's going to be days that go a little bit tougher than others and how they respond to that. But if you're upfront with them at the beginning, that's all they really care about.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong on this, TC, but I think the thing that probably surprises those guys is the working partnership that they step into. Because when I was a head coach, my players called me Coach Major or Coach Mage. And then I had a chance to be a head coach and do some stuff with Team Nigeria. Those guys called me Allen. And I was cool with it. Because it was just a different working relationship. You know what I mean? So that's probably the thing that surprises those guys the most, is that it's a partnership. Like, you got to collaborate with these guys.
Yeah, like that is the main thing, getting to know them. Collaborate with them. You're just spending so much time with them. And a lot of it is not even on the basketball court, especially in our league, because you're traveling. You're trying to spend as much time getting some food with them. You're hanging out in the airport sometimes with them. That it's not going to always be just about hoops. And another thing that I feel like is just different with our league compared to colleges, the individual attention that you're going to get to develop, yeah, as opposed to just always at a team setting. And guys, they love getting individual attention. What can you say? So if they feel like they're getting better individually, you know, that's a huge thing for them personally. So if you and your staff can really buy into, hey, you know what? We're going to do everything we can to get you better, both individually and for our team and for your future, because we all want you to be able to put some more money in your pocket. That's what we're here for, right? So if they can believe and buy into that, then that relationship will change tenfold for you.
Coach, we know you got a lot going on. So we just obviously like to get to at least the last question. There's one thing that we always like to ask everybody. And really, it's just taking everything that we've talked about full circle, your whole journey, starting from where you were and then ultimately bringing you to the head coach that you are now. So putting you back into your first coaching position, knowing what you know now, if you could just share one piece of advice that you would give Coach Swirsky, young Coach Swirsky, VC over in Portland, what would that advice be? And then, you know, what brought you to this advice too?
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that I could go with this one. I would say I just revert back to what I had said earlier. I know it's very cliche, but just doing your job is the most important thing. When I first started, and like a lot of people, you know, you don't want to be a video coordinator for your entire career. They'll be lying to you if they said that they wanted to do that. But I think there's a lot of people who can get caught up in, okay, I'm going to get this video job and I'm just going to do this and that. When I interviewed for the job here with the Grizzlies to be the head video coordinator, I told the coach, he asked me what I wanted to do. And I told him, coach, to be honest with you, I just want to be the best video coordinator I can be. Down the line, if things work out, yeah, I would love to do some other stuff, but I'm not doing my job for him if I'm not being the best video guy I can be. So yeah, if you do that stuff, you do the best job at what you're being asked to do, they're going to throw you a bone here. They're going to let you do some extra stuff. That's how it works. Don't try and take an initiative is a good thing, but keep that main thing, the main thing of just doing your job. Then let everything else fall into place. And that's really helped me now with being like overseeing people in logistics, medical, strength, other coaches where, yeah, they might get frustrated at times. Man, where is this going for me? Am I going to be doing this for a long time? Sometimes, yeah. But if you keep just doing exactly what that team or organization needs you to do, everything will fall into place in the long run. And I truly believe that.
Yeah. No, I love that, man. So that great message, man. Can't hear that enough.
No, you really can't. That's something that, especially young people, like, I know we say it all the time, but looking back, at least on my young career, like, I thought I had all the answers, and I feel like everybody always does. Everybody always does until you really are sitting on the outside looking in, and you're like, wow, yeah, you truly, you're sitting on the inside, and you're like, yeah, I had no idea what I was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But as I said, thank you very much for being on here. I do have to make sure to give a quick mention and shout out. Rising Coaches Conference, U.S. Nike Basketball Camp, Snow Valley Camps, July 22nd. Make sure to sign up. Mike Procopio and Don Showalter are the two people who will be showing up. Incredible opportunity, Westmont College, Santa Barbara, California. But aside from that, no, Coach Swirsky, we really want to thank you for being able to take your time. Like I said, I know obviously you guys have a lot going on, no matter if it's off season or in season, right? You're always going to be busy. So thank you for at least taking the time to be able to help us, be able to educate all the people who are listening and tell everybody about your journey, right? That's the number one thing, is sometimes the self-reflection helps out. So we appreciate you being on here.
Doug, thank you very much for everything. You guys do a great job. I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Yes, sir. So everybody, thanks for tuning in. Another episode, Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan and Doug here. Keep working and keep rising. We'll see you all soon enough. Take care.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.